1948, University of Minnesota, 1966, PhD, University of Minnesota, 1971. He currently holds the Daniel E. Swift Distinguished Chair in Educational and Community Policy and also served as Director of the Fiscal Research Center at Georgia State. He received the Stephen D. Gold Award from the National Tax Association in 2012. He has taught courses in the schools of economics, graduate public finance, state and local public finance, public expenditure analysis, and economics of educational policy, to name a few. He, too, has written several books and volumes of articles, including a chapter on local tax diversification, user charges, local sales taxes, and local income taxes. In the handbook on state and local government finance, he currently works in progress, includes the new state funded property tax actually provide property tax relief and state tax structures, past trends, and future possibilities. Dr. Shortquist, since it sounds like you've been up in the Minnesota, you've been at least close to Nebraska.
I grew up in Minnesota.
In Minnesota?
Yeah, sure.
Well, it's very good.
I kept a little of that. I've been out of there for quite a while. Thank you. We're going to do a tag team. I'm going to talk about the corporate tax, and then Sally's going to talk about the income tax, personal income tax, sort of the age before beauty in this case. So I prepared about an hour presentation that I'm going to try to condense to 20, 25 minutes. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit about background, Nebraska income tax, corporate income tax, arguments for and against the corporate income tax, discuss the structure of the corporate tax, both what other states do, how that compares to what Nebraska does, and then some evaluation of those various provisions. And then talk about economic effects. So the background. Corporation income taxes are pretty common. 43 states plus the District of Columbia have them. The three states that don't tax business in the common way, and then there are four states that tax it in a different way, and I listed those. Here's the trend in corporate income tax revenue in Nebraska. The blue line shows the growth in nominal terms, and the green line shows inflation adjusted. And what you clearly noticed is that adjusting for inflation, you've not had much growth. Over that 32-year period show up there, real corporate income tax returns have increased about 30%, less than 1% a year. The other thing you'll note is it's very cyclical. It fluctuates a lot. So while the average change is less than 1%, most of the time it's either increases or decreases of 5% or more. As a share of revenue, it's been going down until generally a big spike this past in 2012. Currently, Nebraska's at about 5.4% of its tax revenue come from the corporate tax. That's a little bit more than the U.S. average, which is about 5.25%. Most states are between 2.5% and 10%. This is revenue per dollar of income. So income can be thought of as sort of the level of the economy. So this is how corporate revenues have trended as the economy has grown. And you'll see that generally there's been a downward trend, with some cyclicalness in the latter period. Between 1980 and 2011, second to the last point up there, the income tax revenue per dollar of income fell in half, from $4 per thousand to $2 per thousand. And then it jumped up to about $3 per thousand, so a big uptick, kind of unusual. The decline in the first 10 years occurred at a time when Nebraska was raising its income tax rates. They went from a little more than 4% to the current 7.8% at the top rate. So you've got the decline despite that. This is not something unique to Nebraska. This is going on in every state. It's been attributed to a change in corporate structure that you have fewer C-corps and more pass-through entities like S-corps and limited liability partnerships through aggressive tax planning, through tax credits, and other structural changes like tax rate reductions. Thought this was interesting. This is the distribution of revenue by size of corporation. And what you observe is that at the bottom of that, there are 3% of the corporations generate essentially 85% of your corporate income tax revenue. Now, if I was in charge of making sure you got corporate income tax, I would go to those 86 firms just about every day and ask if there's anything I can do to help them out. Can I do their windows? Can I shine their shoes? And that's, you're getting all, most of the revenues from those few firms. John Anderson had a big spread about how property tax revenue per capita per dollar of income differs across the state. He told me he was going to do that, so I did this. This is a simpler version. And for corporate tax, this doesn't mean a whole lot because it partly depends upon the tax rate, which is reflected in there, but it also depends upon how big the corporate sector is in the state. So a smaller corporate sector gets smaller corporate revenue, regardless of the population. The averages for the U.S. are about the same as Nebraska in all those three categories. Okay, so I got through that on time. So let me talk a little bit about some of the justifications that people present for having a state corporate income tax. One is that it's a convenient source of revenue. You know, there's corporations out there that are owned largely by non-residents, and so why not tax them? It's convenient. Well, politically that makes some sense, but from an economic perspective, that's really not a justification for a tax. Second factor is that the corporation income tax can be exported. To the extent that it's paid for by the purchasers and farms are selling out of state, pass it on to consumers out of state. If it's paid by the owners, the corporate stockholders, a lot of those would be located out of state, so they're paying it. But some studies suggest that labor pays part of this tax, and so some of it is being borne locally. Again, this is politically kind of a rationale for having a tax. Everyone wants non-residents to pay their tax. That's why Nevada taxes gambling. It's a common thing to do. Again, it's not a real desirable way of structuring a tax. Common perception is that corporations are rich and therefore they can afford to pay taxes. And economists are, every time that's mentioned, they have to say, corporations do not pay taxes. The consumer pays them, the owners pay them, the workers pay them. The corporation itself doesn't pay those. And so if you want to talk about abilities to pay, you got to be talking about who the owners are, who's paying the tax in the form of higher prices, and what workers are being afforded. There really is no justification for saying that corporations have higher ability to pay and therefore you should tax them more heavily. More germane, though, is that, oops, sorry about that. Someone should have noted that I've lost track. One is that not taxing corporations would not be fair to non-corporations. So if you don't tax corporations, but you're taxing regular businesses, then businesses, those non-corporations, are at a disadvantage financially, and that's not fair. So that's one reason. It's also been argued that you ought to tax corporations or businesses because they benefit from the services that the state provides and local jurisdictions provide. Now that's a rationale for taxing corporations, but it's not a rationale for the corporate income tax. Because profit is probably not the best measure of the benefits that a firm receives from the public services. So states have talked about other kinds of ways of doing that. Now what about not having a tax? There are actually stronger arguments for not having the tax. One is that revenue is small, unstable, and declining relative to the economy, which is what I showed in the previous diagram. Well, just because the revenue was small, 5.5%, doesn't mean it's not trivial. Doesn't mean you want to throw it away. I can't imagine anybody who had a stock portfolio that was generating 5% of their income saying, well, we don't really like, this is not very much money, so let's just throw these stocks away. And why would you do that? It's not a justification. It's not stable, which is a problem for local governments, not for state governments, because you can run a rainy day fund to offset those fluctuations. And you know they're coming, so you plan for that. And they're declining in revenue, which simply means that at some point it's going to get really small. Second is it creates economic distortions. We know the taxes matter, and to the extent that these taxes affect behavior, terms of how much employed and where you're located, how much investment. Those are undesirables. But every tax has those features. You worry about whether the corporate tax does that more or less than other taxes. But of some greater relevance is that it's very complicated, and it's very hard to administer, and very hard to comply with. Lots of money is spent dealing with these small number of corporations to make sure they file correctly. Lots of court cases, lots of litigation. Firms have lots of employees that deal with these issues. County firms have state and local tax practices, SALT practices. Spend hours, lots of money trying to deal with this. So relative to the amount of money, it's very expensive to administer. And finally, and this is probably the thing that most people who would like to do away with the corporate tax point to, is that you really have a hard time accurately measuring the earnings that are generated in the state. So what you're trying to do is tax the earnings of the corporation that are generated in the state. Trying to do that is very difficult, as we'll see. Structure, some of the features. Essentially, the corporate income tax is a tax on income generated in the state, even if it goes to non-residents. So, taxing the income generated, that may go to stockholders in another state, but you're still taxing them. You're not giving those stockholders an exemption. So it's a little bit different than the income tax. When you think about the provisions and how you should do these provisions, the standard litany is you want to minimize economic distortions. You want to make it equitable. You want to try to use it to minimize compliance costs, knowing that it's very expensive compliance-wise. So what I'd like to do is talk about what Nebraska does, what other companies, what other states do, and then to try to do some evaluation based upon these criteria. There is, however, no kind of standard corporate income tax. There's no ideal corporate income tax that economists have come up with or accountants have come up with. And when John Maxcell was here talking about the sales tax, he probably said you should broaden the base and lower the rates. The base should be as broad as possible, the rates as low as possible. Every economist can cite that. You can't do that for the corporate tax. You just don't have that model or ideal tax. So I want to talk about the various structures and how they relate to these criteria, but the conclusion is mine alone, not some unanimity among economists. Although for some of them there is some opinions. So the way it works is most states, 42 of the 44 states that have tax, start with a federal tax, and some don't, and then make some changes. In an earlier presentation, you went over this in some detail, so I'm not going to talk about it. The one thing that Nebraska doesn't do that other states do is to not allow the federal bonus allowances. So several states decouple from the federal bonus depreciation allowances. Nebraska does not do that. One of the issues is, what's the entity that you're taxing? And there are two primary criteria or decisions. One is you could tax each firm separately, each corporation separately. The other is you can tax corporations that are subsidiaries of each other that are in the same industry, a unitary business. So you have combined reporting, which means that you take all of the firms that are aligned with this corporation and are in the same business and tax them as a whole. So sales between are canceled out, losses of one division are offset by profits in another, and you tax the net. 14 states in 2000 required combined reporting. 13 years later, 20 states required combined reporting. So the trend has been to increase that. Nebraska does mandated combined reporting. Other states mandate separate reporting, like Georgia, and others allow the firm to have an option. if you think about the principles, what I come down with is that combined reporting is better.
Okay.
Now, the reasons are that you're taxing the economic unit. You're not taxing units that are established because of tax purposes. You want to tax economic units. So if you tax the combined business, you eliminate the incentive to create tax incentive kinds of institutions. Second, it reduces the ability to engage in tax planning. For example, there is lots of cases where a corporation will set up a subsidiary holding company in Delaware, sell some intangible like a trademark or a copyright, a patent, and then lease it back. So the company, the corporation, the main corporation, pays the subsidiary, the holding company, for the use of that intangible. But the Delaware doesn't tax the returns on those intangibles, so the corporation escapes taxation, so the bottom line increases. Biggest case was Toys R Us, in a case called Godfrey, which was their animal, right? There are other concerns, however. Combined reporting might change the revenue. There might be some negative effect on economic development, but the literature isn't real strong on that. And there's clear administrative problems about how you define a unitary business. What is the unit? What are the criteria, and how do those fit? Second biggest issue is, once you determine what you're going to tax, and you've figured out how much money this corporation has made, if it's a multi-state firm, you have to decide how much of it's going to be taxed in the state. So the approach to that is, in the United States, is to apportion. Internationally, it's to do separate accounting. So each firm in each country has separate accounting. That doesn't seem to work. It's not been popular in the United States. It's never been used. There are three basic ideas about how you would do this kind of formula. You get some kind of ratio. At one point, most states had what is known as a three-factor formula, and now it's only 10. But you take your sales as a share of in the state as a share of total sales. You take property in the state as a share of total property. You take payroll in the state as a share of total property. Add those three ratios up, divide by three, multiply by profit, and that's the share of the profit that the state would tax. Double weighting means that you take the sales and you increase the weight on it, so it counts twice. And sales only means you only tax based on the proportion only on the basis of sales, not property and not labor. Nebraska does sales only. It's been doing that, from 1992, so it's one of the first to do that. The principle is that you should probably weight sales more heavily in the formula, but not entirely. The question is, how much of the income was earned in the state? And you start thinking about that, and it's partly due to where it's produced. But if you didn't sell it, you get no profit. If you didn't produce anything, there's nothing to sell. So both sales and production generate these profits. So both factors ought to be important. And one of the things about the three-factor formula, or any of these formulas, is that if you were to increase, say, the labor, the payroll, given the profit you had, that means a larger share of the profit's going to go to the state. So adding another worker increases the, without changing the total company profit, increases the taxable profit in the state. Now, given that you think that labor and capital are probably more mobile than sales, in terms of economic incentives, you probably want to tax sales more than labor and capital. So that's why I would suggest taxing sales more than the other two factors. But I wouldn't go to 100% sales factor. There are several issues that you have to deal with as a portion of it. How you define the numerator and sales, and how you define the denominator. And so these all relate to that, and I'm going to skip those in the interest of time. So the other thing, then, you get profits, taxable profit, you apply rate. So this is the rate structure, top rate in Nebraska since 1968 when we first established the corporate income tax. It increased in 1991, has been flat since, at the top rate of 7.81. How does that compare to other states? Well, here's one distribution. About 22 of the 45 states that are listed here tax between 6 and 8%. So the bulk are in that range. This list includes Michigan, which taxes business but doesn't have an income tax, a corporate income tax. This is probably a better way of looking at it. This is the array distribution of those rates from high to low. The green bars are those that are neighbors of yours. The hashed line is the median tax rate, which is 7.4%, which is Idaho. And the red line is Nebraska. So you're somewhat above the median, but not at the extreme. You're actually 19th of the 45 states, top to bottom. First would be Iowa at the very end. So you have a tax rate that's somewhat higher. You also have a tax rate that has brackets. You initially didn't, but in 75 you went to two brackets, and over that, since then you've changed the break point from 25,000 to 50,000, more recently to 100,000. So below 100,000 the rate is 5.58, and income above 100,000 is 7.81%. Other states mostly have one rate. 32 of the 45 states have one rate. Two states have two, you and Oregon. Alaska is at the bottom end of the 10 different brackets. Okay. In terms of how things have changed, if you go back 10 years or so, this shows what's changed in the tax rates. So there are 11 states listed here. 9 of those states reduced their tax rate, mostly in states that have higher than average tax rates. Two states increased, one by a very small amount, and in Illinois by a fairly significant 2.2 percentage points. Okay. The other things the states were doing were adding to their tax credits and increasing the sales tax factor. Okay. So, economic development tax credits, most states have these, so you get taxable profit on a tax rate, and you reduce it by the credits. Most states have job tax credits, investment tax credits, R&D credits, film tax credits, deal closing fund that provides other kinds of credits and benefits. Nebraska has several of these, as I say, most other states. From an economics perspective, ignoring the economic development effects, if they work, they're distortionary. And they're causing you to attract businesses that wouldn't otherwise come here but are only doing it for tax purposes. If they don't work, then you're creating inequities. You're providing, for example, reduced taxes to someone who happened to increase their payroll this year, even if it's not in the result, even not as a result of the incentive. So let me talk a little bit more about incentives more generally. What does the literature say? Well, the empirical studies that we've done suggest that they matter. Not a great deal. The better studies suggest they matter. Now, you can tell me your position on, say, the income tax, if you want it or not, on corporate tax, if you want it or not, and I can find a study that will tell you that if you eliminate the tax, your economy is going gangbusters. I can find you a study that says, yeah, you should really never eliminate the tax because it's going to cause havoc. The better studies, however, show there's some effect, which is what economists generally believe. There's less evidence about tax credits. So most of the studies about taxes more generally, but tax credits, there's less. But again, some evidence that suggests that they do have some effect. Problem of trying to identify, do they matter, is that if you have a tax credit, you're interested in whether or not the jobs that are created would have been done only because of that credit or despite the credit. What's the counterfactual? And trying to figure that out is really difficult, so there's very limited studies that have been done. Bartek does the survey of lots of studies and finds that if you were to reduce state and local taxes by 10%, you should expect about a 1 to 6% increase in economic activity as a result of that. So that's not huge, but it's not trivial either. The bigger the numbers correspond to states that have higher unemployment. So the effect depends upon the condition of the state. The effect also depends on how the money is spent. So if you're raising the rates and you're spending it on transportation and education, studies suggest that that doesn't have much effect on business. If you spend it on more welfare transfer kinds of programs, then it does have some effect. Bottom line, sort of, on this is you know, you can pay firms, but you're going to pay by credits, but you're going to pay some firms, and they're going to respond to that, but you're also going to pay firms to do what they would have done otherwise. So that both, do they provide any effect, and what is the benefit? So you know, maybe you get some benefit, but if only 10% of the new jobs that you provide credits to were generated because of the credit, that's costing you a lot of money because you have to pay all those other firms. If you try to play the game of picking winners and losers, you know, business comes in and says, I want to move to your state, how much money are you going to give me? Well, you can play that game, and occasionally you'll pay somebody who's going to come to the state because of the credit. If you don't play the game, occasionally you'll lose some firm that would have come to the state if you gave them the credit. That's the game of economic development. The problem is the business knows, government doesn't know what's going to happen. Let me run through this somewhat quickly. There's been very little work done on the effect of corporate income tax on businesses. And again, it's like the others, it's kind of mixed. But there's reasons why corporate income tax would have a small effect if you were to reduce the rate. One is a small percent of taxes that businesses pay. At best, it's probably 10%. They're paying property taxes, sales taxes, unemployment insurance, severance taxes, business license, transfer fees, a whole host of stuff. Ernst and Young do a study every year looking at how much the corporate tax is, or how much taxes business pay, and it's small. Corporate tax is a small per share of that. The other part of that is that these are deductible, and so you know, you're going to share part of this with the federal government. So a 2% reduction means that the taxes are really going to go down only 1.3%, because you're not going to pay 35%, or you're going to pay 35% more on the revenue that you get to keep. Okay. And then the apportionment formula plays a significant role. Suppose that you had, say, $100,000 a return on investment in Nebraska, and this company has an apportionment ratio of 25%, meaning that 25% of that $100,000 would be taxed in Nebraska. So if you eliminated, reduced the Nebraska tax rate by 2 percentage points, one, it's partly offset, that reduction is partly offset by the federal income tax, and two, you're only going to be taxing the business at 25%. So the investment that yields $100,000, you're only taxing half of that. And so essentially, on that investment, you're lowering the rate by less than, by 0.325 percentage points. Very small. All those factors, and big corporations have low apportionment ratios. In Georgia, the biggest ones have ratios like 5%. So the percentage would be a fifth of that. And then let me go through a simple example of the incentive effect of eliminating the tax when you have sales apportionment. Suppose that this firm has Nexus in Nebraska, and you're only using the sales factor, apportionment. The firm is trying to decide whether to make an investment and whether to put that in state A, name the state, or Nebraska. Assume that the investment's going to generate $100 million in profit before taxes. And the firm has a 50% assessment apportionment ratio in Nebraska. So only half of the return is going to be taxed in Nebraska. So here's the option. Currently, you've got a tax. Arbitrarily say that if you tax, if you locate an A, you're going to pay $3 million to state A. But the profit of that firm that's located in Nebraska is going to go up. Nebraska is going to add that to the base. And it's going to multiply by 50% and multiply by its tax rate. So Nebraska is going to collect $3.9 million, whether the firm located in Nebraska or not. And so if it located in A, it's going to pay state A tax, Nebraska tax for $6.9 million. If it locates in Nebraska, it's going to pay, say, $2 million in the other state because it's not going to have as many workers and investment in the other state. So its proportional ratio is smaller. So it's going to pay total $5.9 million. So the advantage of locating Nebraska is $1 million. Now suppose you wiped out the income tax, corporate income tax. What happens? Well, in both cases, whether you locate in A or Nebraska, the tax falls to zero in Nebraska. So you pay, the firm would pay $3 million if it located in state A, $2 million if it located in Nebraska, for a savings of $1 million. So even without an income tax, corporate income tax, the advantage of locating in Nebraska stays the same. Now this only happens if the firm has nexus in Nebraska and has an apportionment ratio less than one. Firm locating only in Nebraska would not fall under this. And it's also the case that the state loses $3.9 million, the firm earns additional $3.9 million, and they could use that to expand in the state, pay its workers higher, pay its stockholders more. But in terms of incentives, there is no effect. So I'm going to quit it then and turn it over to Sally.
We appreciate it. We're going to hold the questions until we get the
I was told not to take questions.